This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The National LGBTI Health Alliance held its 8th conference, Health in Difference 2013, Our Bodies, Our Minds, in Melbourne in April 2013. Joy 94.9, Australia's only radio station for our diverse communities, is proud to partner with the Alliance to bring you this recording of the 2013 conference.
Welcome everybody. I'm Russell Flynn. I'm one of the members of the board of the LGBTI National Health Alliance and have myself a fairly long background in health and community services and health consumer engagement particularly. I'm very interested in this stream. Around, particularly around like social and cultural determinants of health, and I hope that you'll find this afternoon interesting. Our next presentation, which is by Ian Smith. Ian's here, thanks Ian. Would you like to step up and just, do you know how to use the hyperlink?
Yes.
If you just click on your name, I'm told confidently it will appear. Now, Ian's the director of Allied Health and the principal clinical psychologist at the SJOG agency, which I'm hoping
to know. St. John of God Healthcare.
Thank you. He's a doctoral candidate at Sydney Business School, completing a study on sexual orientation discrimination in the Australian labour market. Ian also has private practice where he specialises in sexual identity disorders and gay issues, such as coming out and identity formation. Now, Ian's going to speak to us about the Australian corporate closet, why it's still so full, a review of incidence rates for sexual orientation discrimination in the workforce.
Okay, this paper that I'm presenting on is a literature review of my thesis. I'm busy doing a doctoral thesis on looking at the comparison between, or rather the effects of heterosexism on sexual orientation disclosure and concealment and how that affects well-being, looking specifically at psychological well-being, job satisfaction, satisfaction with life, and mental health. Okay, so this is a very small part of in 10 minutes or 11 minutes, 12 minutes, looking at the Australian literature. So it's a very, very small part of the Australian literature as an argument for why I think the Australian corporate closet, hence corporate attire, is still so full. Okay. So the presentation reviews extant literature, Australian literature, on sexual orientation discrimination and gender identity within the Australian workplace as a rationale for supporting why the Australian corporate closet is still so full. When presenting to groups who are generally not familiar with this terminology, I tend to have to clarify the terminology, hopefully not in this context. However, I will give very small descriptions or definitions on the terminology that I'll be talking about. The corporate closet is a metaphor for GLBTIQQ employees who have not disclosed their sexual orientation or sexual identity in the workplace. So sexual orientation discrimination. Okay. Sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination is defined as any anti-GLBTIQ behaviour in the form of isolation, hostility, aggression, harassment, and or bullying bias for heteronormativity. Now, nowadays we talk about heterosexism, and I'll explain the definition for heterosexism shortly. Also have written an article in the GLIP last year, the GLIP journal article, explaining the heterosexism versus homophobia, and the article's called Terms, Constructs in Need of Revisitation. We know homophobia is the most widely used term, but of late, if you look at the literature, it doesn't encapsulate all of the nuances around homophobia that heterosexism do. Okay, so disclosure and concealment is the act of either revealing or not revealing personal information, in this case one's sexual orientation or gender identity. And it's repeated over and over again as the processing in one's head takes place, should I or shouldn't I, given the context that we find ourselves in and the people who are in those contexts. Okay, it involves considerable turmoil and a fear of retaliation, rejection, and stigmatization because we don't know other people's attitudes or perceptions about sexual orientation. The literature indicates that GLBTIQ employees, they engage in a number of sexual identity management strategies, or management measures to manage information regarding the sexual orientation as they move from the personal to the professional. So this is a decision to reveal or conceal, and it moves from being completely closeted to completely open. So there's extreme concealment or actively revealing one. And there's a number of management strategies that people use. We talk about concealing or passing or counterfeiting, all the way to being explicitly out. It is a challenge particularly to famous people, including sports people, who are our role models, as disclosure can destroy careers as they lose endorsements. So it's definitely an option for staying in the closet if you're going to lose a multi-million dollar endorsement. Heterosexism. This is defined as an ideological system that denies, denigrates, and stigmatizes any non-heterosexual form of behavior, relationship, or community. And it exists either in the form of direct heterosexism or indirect heterosexism. For direct heterosexism to take place, there needs to be a direct calling someone directly as you're a faggot or a dyke, or indirect telling some jokes about, have you heard about the lesbian or gay boy who, in the presence of someone who is. Now, internalized heterosexism occurs when GLBTIQ individuals internalize a negative assumption and attitudes about their sexual orientation or sexual identity that's not prevalent in society. This leaves a person feeling discomfort, which develops into stress as a result of one's own self-loathing relates to being part of the minority group which is discriminated against, or that which is not heteronormative. And that, if you were in Barry's talk this morning, we've heard that's what he refers to as minority stress. So that's what minority stress is all about. Now, in Australia, attitudinal changes have taken place which have led to a number of legislative amendments and improvements to protect the rights of individuals with different sexual orientations. Additionally, many organisations have a policy against discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or identity within the equal opportunity policies. Homosexuality was decriminalised in all Australian states, and sexual orientation and equal opportunity legislation obliges employees to provide safe workplace environments with regard to harassment and victimisation. However, we know that it still takes place based on the present research. So is discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation still prevalent? And that's basically what my thesis is still wanting to prove. Australian estimates, we heard someone, I think it was Liam yesterday, talk about 11% of the population is GLBTIQ. If you look at the number of papers that have been written out, I took an average, which is about 50%, so I think it's actually much higher due to the sensitive nature of disclosing one's sexual orientation for in case of fear or in the terms of fear. And we work it out based on the present census of the number of people or population of Australia. So that equates to about 3.5 million of us in Australia. And the article I was talking about, the article focuses on why the Australian corporate closet is still so full, and it's evidence, as I said, to support why I think this is the case in Australia. So you can look the whole article up on the if you want. Now, in Australia, there are a number of studies which have illustrated why employees are still hiding in the corporate closet. So what I've done, I've arranged the studies in chronological order. However, due to the extant nature of these studies, I've only taken out the parts that are related to work. So there's not a large number of studies, and not all of them focus exclusively on the workplace for a number of reasons. Okay, the first one I'm looking at is the writing themselves in a study by Professor Lynn Hillier on the sexual health and well-being of same-sex attracted youth and people in Australia. Her study reported that 11% reported work as a part of the place of abuse. In the Jude Store project, in the workplace experience of GLBT across a number of occupations and industries, she found that just over 67% of lesbian and 57% of gay men experienced sexual discrimination. 97% referred that this was not a single incident but was ongoing. Okay, and I'll talk about prejudicial treatment later. 41% felt they had been dismissed because of their homosexuality. Transgender participants were more likely to experience heterosexism, up to 75% of their participants, and only 51% reported being out to everyone in their workplace. In the third study, the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby reported that at least 23% of a sample of gay men, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people in Victoria have experienced discrimination when seeking healthcare. And Victorian transgender people are more likely to be physically or verbally abused than any other men or women in Australia. Study 4. Irwin and her study on discrimination against gay men, lesbians, and transgender teachers, academics, and educators found that just over 60% experienced homophobic behavior, harassment, and discrimination, 27% reported being outed, 11% being threatened with physical violence, 16% being sexually harassed, 1% was sexually assaulted, and 9% had been denied entitlements available to heterosexual staff. And perpetrators were more likely to be work colleagues employed at a similar or senior level. Also, 35% reported being open to everyone at work, so only 35%. Irwin, the prejudicial treatment is formed in the form of undermining and sabotaging of work, unreasonable work expectations, limited opportunities for career development, threat of loss of promotion, and 17.5% stated they had been denied partners' rights to superannuation. In the study by Goodyear and Defris, they explored the climate for GLBT people in the workplace of the Faculty of Employees at the University of Western Australia and described two projects which aimed to make the university a safer place to work both for students and lecturers alike. And that was called the Rainbow Project. They found that there were a majority of students with homophobic attitudes. GLBT employees reported it unsafe to be a place to be out at. 15% of staff reported saying, "I avoid gay men," so they obviously also interviewed heterosexuals. 8% reported saying, "I avoid lesbians." And 14% of the heterosexual component of the study thought that homosexuality was immoral. And this was in 2002. The sixth study, in the not yet equal documenting the experience of people in the same-sex relationships, McNair found that 75% concealed their sexual orientation to avoid discrimination. Only 54% had disclosed to everyone, and bisexuals had the highest concealment at 92% due to fear of sexual orientation discrimination. In the same study, Bowers et al. Carried out a qualitative study and found that the attitudes and behaviours of newly qualified clinicians, that is mostly nurses, are influenced by attitudes and behaviours of more experienced clinicians and managers. And they found that the study highlights the effect of managers in organisations and the role they play in modelling behaviour with regard to sexual orientation discrimination. As a result, they found that GLBT caregivers, that's newly qualified caregivers, nurses, do not disclose their sexual orientation at work in the workplace for fear of discrimination, harassment from colleagues. And they also found that this impacts negatively on their career and job prospects. And this is commensurate with international literature by Rose. Pitts et al. Found that in their private lives report, that fear of heterosexism caused 67% of GLBT employees to modify their daily activities, in other words, to change who they are naturally, and 10% had been refused employment or promotion due to their sexual orientation. 39, Paul Willis, who now works in the UK, he found that in looking at the forms of homonegativity encountered and described by young GLBT employees in their workplace, with regard to symbolic practices, he found that 66% had witnessed homonegative expressions in the workplace. With regards to material practices, 30% reported verbal abuse and harassment. With regards to discriminatory practices, he reported that 10% reported unfair dismissal and 3% reported refusal of leave provisions based on their sexual orientation. In the study carried out by Robinson and Berman in 2010, we heard this was reported about earlier yesterday, 80% of the respondents were employed. 12% reported that their workplace as the most recent place of abuse, harassment or violence. 62% concealed their sexual orientation due to fear of discrimination, even though legislation in Queensland has been around for 17 years. Okay, the last study is that an exploratory study on the effects of disclosure of sexual orientation at work. Barrett and Lewis found in their study on the effects of disclosure of sexual orientation at work for 152 GLBTI employees in Queensland that suggested that GLBTI employees are disclosing their sexual orientation more, but as a result of this disclosure, they're experiencing more discrimination in the workplace despite anti-discrimination policies being in place. So the potential for discrimination is seen to be higher when GLBTQ individuals disclose their sexual orientation in the workplace. And this is commensurate with a number of international studies done in America and the UK and in fact in Greece. Now, the results of heterosexism, so if you listen to Barry's talk, you would know, this is just a reinforcement of what Barry said earlier, that the results of heterosexism, which is anything that's not heteronormative, affects up to 66% of GLBT employees. It results in severe mental health issues, with GLBTIQ mental health issues being the poorest in Australia. GLBT individuals are 14 times more likely to attempt suicide versus the general population, with the first attempt at suicide being at the age of 16. Up to 36% of GLBT Australians experience major depressive disorder versus 6.8% of the people in the general population, so this is 5 times higher. And a recent study indicates that 35% of the Australian population who are 14 and older believe that homosexuality is immoral. This translates to 43% of men and 27% of women. So, in conclusion, from the above studies, so the studies above confirm that workplace discrimination against GLBTIQ employees still exists in Australia. Given workplaces, and these limited studies indicate positive relationships between heterosexism and workplace distress due to outness. Okay. So workplace discrimination, form of heterosexism, still exists. And clearly these are good reasons why a number of diverse workplace individuals still choose to stay in the corporate closet. Thank you. Is that 10 minutes? So the original presentation is an hour, so...
Yeah. And you managed to get through that in about 10 or 12 minutes, so thank you very much. Ian, would you be happy to take a few questions from the floor?
Yeah, sure.
If I might just, one comment.
Yes.
So I think maybe depressingly accurate summary of the context. So,
yeah.
Questions from the floor?
Can we have your email address again?
Yeah, I'll give you a better one. Okay. It's ian.smith at sjog, so St. John of God. sjog.org.au. Now, this paper, where this comes from, that one there,
yes.
Before I came last week, I had a meeting with my CEO and executive director for the Eastern region, and we were talking about things, and she said, what have you written lately? Because we write articles. I said, well, I've written this one. She said, well, I hope this has got nothing to do with our organization. Strange, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, well, actually, yes, it does. So I'll proudly display where I work. Okay.
Yes. I'm not sure if it's your area of research, but it's just a question if you can answer. Just in terms of, corporate leadership and sort of what research or is there, one would imagine, there were some comments you made about higher levels of management and setting tones and that sort of thing, apart from sort of common sense or something.
If you read the literature, people are more likely to disclose if their direct manager or their line report is more friendly or more accepting, and then their colleagues. So that's first of all the direct manager, the line report. If that person is accepting one sexual orientation or sexual identity, the person's more likely to disclose because they feel safe and protected by the person who they report to. Yes.
So you're connected with Pride and Diversity?
Yes, so with Dornhoff, I've worked last year, if you were at the presentation, this presentation I actually gave for an hour, I was the academic speaker there, and Dawn, we were having a chat this morning. Pride and Diversity, and I think they're doing a lot of work, a lot of amazing work. We know Michael Kirby is their supporter and everything. I haven't found that they support a whole lot of, really rich companies, and missing out a whole lot of the poorer companies, like the small petrol station on the corner or, the little, standalone independent store holders where most people work as well. So there's a lot of work I feel being done at the top range, the middle and lower range. I don't think any work's being done. And that's unfortunately, I think, where most of the heterosexist behaviors and slurs and things take place.
But then the flip side is you're also seeing people who support GLBT people in those smaller organisations.
Correct, yes.
And they don't have a chance to share that view either.
Correct,
That point that you're making, some of those organisations are insisting their procurement chains.
Yes.
Is that actually happening or are they just saying it on paper, do you think?
To be honest, this is my personal opinion. I think they give a lot of lip service. If you have to look at the ratio of number of staff working to how much money has been put into a small amount of people, and if you know the workplace index, which they have to answer, although there's like 5 major questions, to actually meet all those ticks, it's not very difficult, I don't think. But you take a small organization which has to put in place the policies, make sure there's engagement, make sure there's engage with the organization, with other organizations, what social clubs are putting in place for this organization to engage with other organizations. Small organizations can't do that. They don't have the money to do that. Look at NAB. The top 5 organizations, KPMG, NAB, Federal Police. Federal Police, I think they have other motivations why they do it for the public, which is obviously very good, so I'm glad that's happening. But KPMG can afford to throw around $10,000 in that organization's direction. That's nothing to them.
Yeah.
So... Yeah.
So you're not convinced, really?
I'm not convinced. And personally, I experience heterosexist slurs on a weekly basis at my organization by some people who are, people can get away with it. Some people, there's one person I work with her, she uses humor. And I know she doesn't mean what she says, but it's still a heterosexist slur. And some people are very naive, and sometimes you let things go. And we have 15 hospitals across Australia and have $1 billion turnover, so we've got a large number of staff. They heard the comment, I hope this has got nothing to do with our organisation. Admittedly, because of the the thing that's going with all the priests at the moment, the Pedophilia literature. So it's a very, very small part of the Australian literature as an argument for why I think the Australian corporate closet, hence corporate attire, is still so full. Okay. So the presentation reviews extant literature, Australian literature, on sexual orientation discrimination and gender identity within the Australian workplace as a rationale for supporting why the Australian corporate closet is still so full. When presenting to groups who are generally not afraid or familiar with this terminology, I tend to have to clarify the terminology, hopefully not in this context. However, I will give very small descriptions or definitions on the terminology that I'll be talking about. The corporate closet is a metaphor for GLBTIQQ employees who have not disclosed their sexual orientation or sexual identity in the workplace. So sexual orientation discrimination. Okay, sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination is defined as any anti-GLBTIQ behavior in the form of isolation, hostility, aggression, harassment, and or bullying bias for heteronormativity. Now, nowadays we talk about heterosexism, and I'll explain the definition for heterosexism shortly. Also have written an article in the GLIP last year, the GLIP journal article, explaining the heterosexism versus homophobia, and the article's called Terms, Constructs in Need of Revisitation. We know homophobia is the most widely used term, but of late, if you look at the literature, it doesn't encapsulate all of the nuances around homophobia that heterosexism do. Okay, so disclosure and concealment is the act of either revealing or not revealing personal information, in this case one's sexual orientation or gender identity. And it's repeated over and over again as the processing in one's head takes place, should I or shouldn't I, given the context that we find ourselves in and the people who are in those contexts. Okay, it involves considerable turmoil and a fear of retaliation, rejection, and stigmatization because we don't know other people's attitudes or perceptions about sexual orientation. The literature indicates that GLBTIQ employees, they engage a number of sexual identity management strategies, or management measures to manage manage information regarding their sexual orientation as they move from the personal to the professional. So this is a decision to reveal or conceal, and it moves from being completely closeted to completely open. So there's extreme concealment or actively revealing one. And there's a number of management strategies that people use. We talk about concealing or passing or counterfeiting, all the way to being explicitly out. It is a challenge particularly to famous people, including sports people, who are our role models, as disclosure can destroy careers as they lose endorsements. So it's definitely an option for staying in the closet if you're going to lose a multi-million dollar endorsement. Heterosexism. This is defined as an ideological system that denies, denigrates, and stigmatizes any non-heterosexual form of behavior, relationship, or community. And it exists either in the form of direct heterosexism or indirect heterosexism. For direct heterosexism to take place, there needs to be a direct calling someone directly as you're a faggot or a dyke, or indirect telling some jokes about have you heard about the lesbian or gay boy who, in the presence of someone who is. Now, internalized heterosexism occurs when GLBTIQ individuals internalize a negative assumption and attitudes about their sexual orientation or sexual identity that is not prevalent in society. This leaves a person feeling discomfort, which develops into stress as a result of one's own self-loathing relates to being part of the minority group which is discriminated against, or that which is not heteronormative. And that, if you were in Barry's talk this morning, we've heard that's what he refers to as minority stress. So that's what minority stress is all about. Now, in Australia, attitudinal changes have taken place, which have led to a number of legislative amendments and improvements to protect the rights of individuals with different sexual orientations. Additionally, many organisations have a policy against discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or identity within the equal opportunity policies. Homosexuality was decriminalised in all Australian states, and sexual orientation equal opportunity legislation obliges employees to provide safe workplace environments with regard to harassment and victimisation. However, we know that it still takes place based on the present research. So is discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation still prevalent? And that's basically what my thesis is still wanting to prove. Australian estimates, we heard someone, I think it was Leon yesterday, talk about 11% of the population is GLBTIQ. If you look at the number of papers that have been written out, I took an average, which is about 15%. So I think it's actually much higher due to the sensitive nature of disclosing one's sexual orientation in case of fear or in terms of fear. And we work it out based on the present census of the number of people or population of Australia. So that equates to about 3.5 million of us in Australia.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.